Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, happy to have you here this week, kicking off your happy hour and hopefully getting your weekend going in the right direction. And sure, as always, to my radio listeners out there, the views of this host and this show certainly do not reflect the views of much of what you will find on this station. That's the straight truth. Hey, got a really good show coming up for you here this week. We're going to be chatting with the guys from St. George Spirits, a very fine distillery out in Alameda, California, which is located near Oakland in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'll be joined by their master distiller, Lance Winters, and their head distiller, Dave Smith. I've mentioned this a couple times on the show before, had the good fortune of meeting with Dave and meeting him in person in New Orleans right before Tales of the Cocktail in July. Ended up doing a private tasting with a chunk of their portfolio with him. And we basically actually just kind of visited and developed a friendship, sat around and shot the breeze for a couple hours, tasting their fine juice and just swapping stories and things like that. And just great time with Dave. So that was really kind of the impetus for this show. Never had a chance to meet Lance before we taped this one, but Lance coincidentally comes from my hometown of Fremont, California. I promise we spare you a lot of the stories that we were telling and talking about during the breaks when we did the interview. I'm sure we bored the hell out of Dave, but Lance and I, we're about the same age, so we were talking about old jobs we had, old stomping grounds, things like that, and undoubtedly our paths, I'm sure, crossed multiple times back in the day in Fremont, California. Good to see that they let some of us out and inflict us on the rest of the world out there. Anyway, great interview coming up. We're going to taste a lot of their, we'll taste a few of their expressions. We're going to be talking about their philosophy, their story, their approach to spirits, making a really unique story at St. George Spirits. Really fine stuff. So that's going to be a fun interview coming up just after the break. Couple programming notes, and I'll get into more of this. I'll tell you more shows that we have coming up is what I'm trying to say. We got a whole slate of shows we're getting on the schedule here for the coming weeks. I will detail more of this when we do our podcast-only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks. So if you are listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com because that is the only place that you can get the podcast. Well, actually, you can get it on your favorite podcast platform, but that is the gateway to get the show however you want, wherever you listen to podcasts. But that's where the only place where you can get Another Shot with Nola Drinks. And we continue our conversation with Lance and Dave there. And after that, I'll touch on some of the shows that we have coming up. But next week, I will flag a couple to your attention. So this one first. Next week, we're going to be chatting about Old Fashioned Week. This is an event sponsored by Elijah Craig Bourbon. And it benefits this year the Southern Smoke Foundation, which is a super fine organization that provides crisis relief and essentially provides a safety net for food and beverage industry workers across the country. Basically, the idea is if you go to a participating bar during Old Fashioned Week, which is, I believe, October 14th through the 23rd, some of the proceeds will go to benefit the Southern Smoke Foundation. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what the foundation does. We're going to talk about the week. We're going to talk about Elijah Craig Bourbon. And of course, talk about the Old Fashioned Cocktail. Another really cool show that we're going to have coming up for you in probably 2 to 3 weeks. Our good friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum have a new exhibit opening up, and it's all about the history and culinary contributions of the Filipino community here in the New Orleans area. That's going to be really interesting, and a lot of fun. And I look forward to bringing you that one. As I said, I'll detail a couple more of the shows we got coming up in the near future as well in our podcast-only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks. But in the meantime, we're going to take a little break here on the program. We're going to come back with our featured interview, chatting with Lance and Dave from St. George Spirits. Come on back.
I'm Liz Williams, host of Tip of the Tongue on the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. Join me and weekly guests for conversations about food and drink and the people who create food culture around the world. The show is for the curious, hungry for food knowledge. My new book, Nana's Creole Italian Table, about the Sicilian community in New Orleans, can be pre-ordered from Amazon. Learn more about Nitty Grits Podcast Network at southernfood.org.
Drinking wine for the order. Drinking wine for the order. Drinking wine for the order. Pass that bottle to me. We say wine, wine, elderberry. Wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here as always, and very happy to be chatting with my guests that, you know, as I talked about at the top of the show, we are chatting with the fellas from St. George Spirits, a very fine distillery out there in Alameda, California. And I am joined by Dave Smith, who is the president of Vices and also head distiller. Dave, it's great to see you again, man.
Hey, great to see you. Really happy to be here.
Yeah, great. Thanks. And also Lance Winters. And Lance is the evil genius slash master distiller slash Fremont native, also a victim of the same hometown that yours truly is from. Lance, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be on your show.
Thank you.
Good to see another local boy make good.
Hey, I really appreciate that. It's good to see another native. I shouldn't take credit for this. I was going to say, good to see another native of Fremont being able to string together more than one sentence in a conversation. But I'm not really clear that I can actually do that. I know you can. So you're making us look good.
I've listened to you for a little while now, and I'm actually having more belief in California public schools than I was before.
There you go. We are both products of Fremont Unified School District. I'll share that as well. But hey, guys, it's really, I appreciate you. What's that, Lance? Sorry.
Malud, as they say on Yeehaw.
That's it. Well, it's great to see you both, and thanks for making time. And you guys both know that I think very highly of what it is that you do at St. George Spirit, St. George Distilling in Alameda. And Dave, I had the good fortune of sitting with you a couple months ago, right before Tales of the Cocktail kicked off, and we had a great visit for a couple hours while you were here in New Orleans. So I'm going to ask you to repeat a lot of the stuff that you told me then, but I'll start with you if that's okay. Can you just give us the story of, I know the distillery was around before you guys got involved, but give us the overview of how St. George is and was and where it's all going these days.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll share that St. George Spirits were proudly America's oldest craft distillery. We were founded in 1982. So that's 40 years ago. And you think about drinks culture. That's a long, long time. That's, you know, the 80s, the 90s, the early aughts. It's really evolved and changed over the course of that time. And we were founded as an eau de vie distillery by a man named Jorg Rupf. Jorg came to America with some old world traditions, some awareness about it. Actually, had been distilling when he was 13 years old. Made a plum brandy with plums from the tree in the family's backyard, and comes from a family of brewers, distillers in the Black Forest region of Germany. But Jorg arrived in America and fell in love with California, fell in love with the Bountiful Harvest. He fell in love with a concert pianist and wanted to do something different with his life, and had an opportunity to found America's first craft distillery at that point. He started to explore that as an eau de vie distillery, as an unaged fruit brandy distillery. And this part's really important because it influences everything that we've done since then.
Dave, if I may, just real quick, I just want to say that the other thing that's important as far as just thinking about eau de vie distiller, think about 1982. Brian, you weren't old enough to legally drink in 1982, but you did. And most of the people that you'd see drinking were drinking wine coolers and wine spritzers. And there were actually bars that were dedicated to that. And it just thinking about that gives me hives. And picture somebody coming in and starting a small distillery, which that's crazy fact number one. It's a very difficult industry to crack into at all, let alone when you're small. It's like starting a new car company. Mm-hmm. And then think about the fact that he's producing something, one, we Americans can't pronounce, let alone know how to drink. And it's meant to be consumed neat at 40% alcohol when people are watering down their Chardonnay with 7-Up.
Right.
This is so coming back to what Dave's talking about and how eau de vie is an important thing to who we are even today. What Jorg was doing was an act of artistry. Anytime if you're making a product, oftentimes you're thought of as an entrepreneur. But if you're making a product because you think it's beautiful, not because there's a market for it, not because there's a niche and somebody's going to make money off of it, that's artistry. And sticking to it, that's crazy artistry. And that's exactly what he did at that time. And he stuck with it. We're very, very fortunate that he's a tourist and a German. Both make him extra stubborn, and they made him stick to what he was doing, stay the course, and brought us to where he brought himself to where he was when both Dave and I found him. Dave, take it away.
Yep.
You came on board. You know, Jorg had gained a reputation internationally for fruit brandies, for eau de vie, for unaged fruit brandies. And most of St. George Spirits sales were back to the old world. They were going to Germany and Austria and Switzerland. It wasn't like Americans had a taste for eau de vie. And Lance, you came on board in the mid-90s there, 95, 96 was your first year?
96. February of 96, right after Valentine's Day.
Okay. It's a match made in heaven. You showed up with a dream of making single malt whiskey and an excitement. And you had a bottle of your own homemade single malt whiskey that you came here with, and you wanted to make, you know, something new. Something that York didn't know how to make at that point. And so York, in his infinite wisdom, said, sure, why not? Let's try it. Let's try it out. And by the way, before we make any whiskey, I got a bunch of pears we got to distill. And by the way, we've got to distill, I've got cherries coming in, raspberries. And it, through that process, you usually describe this, Lance, but it's a sense of almost, you showed up with a love for single malt whiskey. You showed up with a background in brewing and a desire to make something really unique in the single malt whiskey world. And you learned through York to love distillation as an act of creativity, as an act of execution, as an act of actually sharing a new story, a new concept.
Dave, excuse me really quick. Lance, let me ask you this question. So when you came on board, kind of coming from, as Dave just said, the angle of wanting to do a single malt whiskey, I know single malt whiskeys at that time, you know, certainly had a market in the U.S., but probably not as sizable as it is now, or the broader interest of it is much larger now. Was that an attempt by York and yourself to broaden the curb appeal to the U.S. market? Or was that just kind of like, this is something else that makes sense, a natural extension, we both like it? And or am I applying way too much forethought to this?
I'm gonna just ask for the correction of, you're thinking about it in like a forward-facing way of like actually trying to make sense.
Okay.
this is not how we run.
Yeah. Please stop accusing us of sensibility. And being
you know, I ask hard-hitting questions on this show, Lance, so I'm trying to get to the truth here, man.
Yeah, gotcha journalism right here. That's it was like with, again, this is something that we'll come back to here. With so much that we do here, it's about expressing ourselves. And I wanted to express myself through whiskey. A buddy of mine, another Fremont native, Todd Powell, gave me a bottle of Lagavulin, and that bottle of Lagavulin just set my mind reeling. All the other spirits that I had tasted up until that point just seemed like faster tracks to getting a buzz at a party. And some of them were easier to drink, Rumplemans. Some of them were more difficult to drink. I won't name those. The Lagavulin, I tasted, and this spirit was telling me a story. This spirit was unwinding and unfolding. It was like an ogre. It had layers, or an onion, or a parfait, just to cover all the Shrek bases. As soon as that inspired me, and I started studying where whiskey comes from and realizing that brewing was half of it, like, hey, I'm halfway there. I really want to learn the rest. That's when I started bringing beer home from the brewery and distilling that. And at that point, it's like, I can make something. If you make a beer, somebody can drink it in the next couple of months and enjoy it. If you make a whiskey, somebody can pick up a bottle 100 years from now and still enjoy that. So it's the closest stab that we have at creating an immortal statement. And it's just such a thrill to be able to do that. It doesn't matter at that. It didn't matter at that point that it wasn't a huge market. We never thought we'd make a bunch of money. It's about the process. It's about making something. And if we can sell enough of it that we can make a living doing it, not make a mint, we're not out there to make money. We're out there to make products.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So Dave, tell us, and I know we're going to skip some of the story. We'll circle back a little bit more in our podcast only segment, but, we've got about 5 minutes left before we take our first break here. When did you get involved and how did you get involved?
I got involved, it was January of 2005. So I have been working with my brother, in the wine industry here in the Bay Area, and learned just enough about winemaking to be vaguely dangerous with a forklift, to run some pumps and hoses and tanks, had some cellar chemistry. At that point, I was going to use the wine industry to travel and to write and to tell stories and to explore that, and was really excited by it. And my brother's advice was, hey, Lance and York are really good guys. If you have a chance, I think they need some help over at St. George. If Lance offers you a job, you say yes. And another winemaker I was working for at the time, Mike Dash, commented, he's, Dave, do you know Lance over at St. George? You got a really kind of dark black sense of humor. I think you'd get along with him. I think you can get along with him. And had a chance to talk to Lance, had a chance to come work over at St. George. I didn't ask how much I was going to get paid. So, and managed, there's a whole story here about dropping F-bombs in an interview that occasionally does work for you. But the point is that I got offered a job, and I thought I would do this for a year. I thought I would learn, I would be here, I'd be present, and then I would go back to the wine industry and I would use that to travel and write. And I'd have another sort of understanding, another basis, another skill sort of in my toolkit here. And I just fell in love with it. I fell down the rabbit hole. I fell in love with the idea of process and an opportunity to learn and grow and be challenged and tell stories in a way that I never could conceptualize as a writer for this.
Yeah, and Dave, I've seen your writing. You made a great career choice.
Much, much better.
Well, how about this then, you guys? Let's start here. We got about 3 minutes before we take our first break. Let's use the, I have a pour of the gin here. We'll come back to the gin after we take a break, but let's start with that, because I think you're talking about, Dave, you mentioned process, and you guys make such unique things. And I think each thing is almost sort of singular in a very positive way in what it is that you do. So Lance, you want to tell us a little bit about the gin? We'll have a sip, and then I'm going to cut you off in like 3 minutes. We're going to take a break, but let's start.
Yeah, you bet. I'll try and see if I can fit into 3 minutes.
We can carry over after, man. It's good.
Yeah, awesome. So years ago, probably 14 years ago or so, I was picking my son up from summer camp. And it's this camp up in the hills, beautiful, hot summer day. And as I walk up there, I'm just really hit by all the aromas that are coming forth from the forest. And as I was leaving there, I'm thinking to myself, God, I would really love to be able to distill something that smells like this place. And then I hit myself in the head. I'm like, you idiot, this is what you do. You know, your job as a distiller is to capture aromatics and put them together in a compelling fashion. And so much of the time we get hung up on the very traditional paths that we have of, you know, let's make sure that we get some great aromas in this whiskey or in whatever. But building a gin the way a perfume maker would, by saying, these are all the notes that you need to have to paint this picture, That's what the terroir gin became all about. Initially, not even conceptualized as a gin, just a drinkable ode to the Bay Area's hillscapes. It became a gin when we realized it needed a category, and gin was sort of the perfect one because juniper berries worked in very, very nicely with the rest of the aromatics and the flavor profile that are present in the hillscape.
Okay, fantastic. You know, I love it. I tasted it for the first time. I had not had it before until Dave, you and I tasted it a couple months ago, or you tasted me on it. And it does very much remind me of the hills. And was it the Berkeley Hills? We were actually, Dave, you were telling me what park it was. There was the inspiration for, or was it somewhere in Castor Valley or something like that? That was...
Go ahead, it's actually Redwood Park up in the Oakland Hills.
That's it. Okay.
The chit is named for Mount Tam. Just because it's a more recognizable hillscape for most people. But one of the lesser known beautiful secrets of the East Bay is that Oakland has some magnificent parks. Between Joaquin Miller and Redwood and Sibley, they're just, you can be in one of those parks and not know that you're within 10 miles of civilization, and you can just escape. It's really, really beautiful. But if you can't do that, you can pick up a glass of terroir, shut your eyes and take in a deep breath, and it's transportive. That was the goal, was to make something where you shut your eyes over your martini glass and suddenly you're on a hike in the woods, and it's whatever woods you want it to be. There are so many people who have identified it with different places and made it their own work of art.
Very cool. Awesome. And I would say we could probably do both, right, Lance? I mean, nothing wrong with taking a Bota bag with this gin in it and going to hike the Oakland Hills.
I heartily agree.
Well, how about if we do this, you guys, let's take our first break here on the show, and we're going to come back and we'll revisit the gin briefly. We're going to taste a few more things and continue to get the story of St. George Spirits with Dave and Lance. Come on back.
Hey, everybody, Roger here with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Be sure to check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of shows about food, drink, and culture. Visit southernfood.org for more.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're going to stay here till we soothe our soul. It takes all that long.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here. Thanks for listening to the show. We are chatting with Dave and Lance from St. George Spirits, all the way out there on the West Coast in California. We tasted the lovely terroir gin, and we're going to taste some vodka here in just a second. But let me ask you guys this question real quick, and I'll throw this to you, Lance, because we were kind of talking about it. You mentioned something I think it was very interesting. You were talking about how calling it gin, you were kind of looking for a spirit category to fit what it is that you created. And I ask this question from time to time of people. I think here in the US, like, we like to put things in little boxes, don't we? And so, like, with clear spirits, I think we do a really poor job of that, because we either want it to be like a vodka, a gin, a white tequila. And then if it's anything else, it confuses people. But there's a whole big world of clear spirits out there, unaged spirits. We talked about eau de vie, how you guys got your start. And I mean, do you guys find that challenging from time to time to kind of, I mean, to help people understand and understand a definition of a category, or especially when it's something as unique as this?
Yeah, it's always a challenge, and it's been a challenge for 40 years for the distillery, 26 years for me, and nearly 20 for Dave. We're constantly challenged by it. And yet it's part of the most satisfying part of the job, because instead of putting something in front of somebody that's just a shade of gray different from something they've already tried, this is something that's completely unique. This is something that's completely new and very eye-opening for somebody. The hard part is prying open their mouth and pouring some into the mouth. But once it's there, we've set the hook, and we can explain what's going on in that spirit. It's hard to do on the broad market, because the conversation tends to be dominated by a lot of people that are saying the same thing, just saying it with different dressing on the bottle. But you know, if we have the opportunity to go out into the market, Dave's trip out to New Orleans for Tales, it's that sort of outreach to talk to people directly about what it is we're doing and share it with them, and hopefully let them find their own way of finding meaning in it, their own connection point to it.
Very cool.
And I'll say that one of the things I love when someone says that they don't like a category, I love to hear, what is that, gin? I don't like gin. Or what is that, whiskey? I don't like whiskey. And I'm confident that it's true. You may not like that category, but I'm confident that you actually haven't tasted the entire spectrum of what's available out there. I want to basically break down that boundary for you. I want you to have an experience and think, oh God, I didn't know I liked gin. Like, it turns out I do like gin. And what else is out there? Like, use of spirit that we make as a gateway drug to that category to go explore and see that there may be something else that you really do enjoy there.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And that's why I even ask that question from time to time. I think especially gin, when we were all growing up, right, gin was so often dominated by the London Dry category and very juniper forward, that if it wasn't that, and you're tasting, you know, now we have so many Mediterranean gins and this lovely gin that you guys make, your terroir gin, on the market, it's a huge world out there. And just trying to get people to understand the broadness of the category, or maybe stop fighting trying to put something into a category. And I think with a lot of, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'll throw this to you, Dave. I mean, I think that's a lot of what you guys sort of do in general with the different spirits you make. I mean, you come with a goal, I think, right? And then put it out there and put something together that's interesting and something that you want to make.
Yeah. The thing that we don't want to hear from anyone is, oh my God, this, St. George gin, I love your gin. It's just like this other thing that I love. That's a complete fail. It's a miss for us. What we want to do is have you something, make something that you really react to, something that's new and unique, and it's expressive of our own point of view. And this is a great example of it, but it's something where people, you know, often say like, oh, gin, it's too piney. It tastes like trees. It's not for me. And our argument is basically, what you don't like is poorly made gin. We're actually going to put trees into this gin and show you how delicious it can be. we're going to make something that's really, truly evocative of having a martini in the woods. I think that's spectacular.
That's really cool. And I mean, and elaborate on that a little bit, you guys, and we'll move into the vodka here. Maybe use that to tell a story as well. That's really how you approach this, right? I mean, you're looking Lance, you said this when hiking, this was the motivation for the gin. You are looking to, basically tell a story, right? And I know I sound a little cliche, but I think that's the idea.
Cliches are cliche because they're so fitting. We use them over and over again and they become cliche, but it's totally apt. And with the case of the green chili vodka, the next brew pub that I worked at after I left Brew Pub on the Green, Jeff Harries, who had been the general manager at Brew Pub on the Green, went over and bought Buffalo Bills and Hayward at 1080 Sabine Street.
I'm smiling. Listeners can't see that right now, but I'm smiling.
And
in the street. Be creative? No, just call it B Street.
There you go.
B Street, yep.
The fellas in the kitchen there would make a batch of salsa every day, and they would put it in a colander and then let all the excess liquid drain away so that the salsa wouldn't get soggy. And that liquid was something that I would tote around with me all day, every day, and just sip on, because it was this great mixture of tomato water with onions, cilantro, a little bit of garlic, and some peppers. And it had this hint of spice, but it was mostly refreshing and bright, like a liquid salad. And when we had a lull and some distilling action, and we thought, let's make something. What do you want to make? And we wanted to make something that was a callback to the way that salsa fresca juice drank. And so to go about that, we packed the still full of jalapenos, green jalapenos that we get about an hour away from here. Really lovely little farm. We put lime peel in there. We put fresh cilantro in the Carter head, distilled through that fresh cilantro, pick up that bright, fresh herbaceousness. And then infused with red and yellow bell peppers, habaneros, and serranos for just a touch of heat. The goal here, again, just being about that fresh salsa fresca mouthfeel, so it can layer into a lot of great savory cocktails.
It's really lovely. And I know I told you this story, Dave, when you and I were together the first time. It's actually the first thing, I'll get to that in a little bit, that I ever tasted of yours. Was this vodka. And a friend of mine, Abigail Gula, who's a very noted bartender around the country and in New Orleans as well, she tasted me on this. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things where she's like, you really got to try this. And that was a number of years ago. And, you know, when the height of the flavored vodka category was everywhere. So I am going to have that. I did have that knee jerk reaction of, oh man, another flavored vodka, this time with chili. This is amazingly well integrated and far more sophisticated. But here's my question, actually. Now that maybe we've moved past the days, I mean, I know flavored vodkas are still all cheap, flavored vodkas, artificial, are still all over the place. Do you have to explain this a lot these days still? Or is it something that people have started to understand better?
We've got the double-edged sword of having to explain it from the standpoint of this actually being a good flavored vodka. And this being a chili vodka that's not about fraternity hazing tool, but about the flavor. I hate to do this, but Brian, think about when we were young drinkers and we were going to the liquor stores that would take care of us when we were kids. And like the mezcal that was available was Cusano Rojo, that bottle with the nasty little worm inside. And that was... mezcal was tequila from the bottom of the barrel, and it had a worm in it. And that's all it was. Fast forward to today, I would argue, and I might be killed by the Consejo in Mexico. They'll send a hitman up to take care of me for saying this, but I think mezcal is better than tequila. I think it's got a lot more character and a lot more genuineness. But that's all to say that, you know, a few bad apples can spoil a whole category, and it only takes a handful of cupcake and Fruit Loop vodkas to ruin it for all the people who see it as a serious, compelling category where we can actually do something that grownups can drink.
Now, do you think, and let me further that question, and Dave, if you want to answer, like when you're dealing with bartenders, have bartenders by and large moved past this though? Good bartenders.
I got to say, actually, one of the things. So, is when we were working on the green chili vodka, lots of great bartenders, folks we've known in the industry, you know, they'd have a hard stance of, oh, I finally opened my own bar and I'm so tired of the vodka soda drinkers that I am not going to actually carry vodka in my bar. I'm not going to have any. And I remember just being surprised, frankly, and overjoyed because we saw them, those same bartenders posting on, you know, social media that it's St. George Vodka Day. There's a St. George vodka, you know, flavored vodka out. I said I'd never have a vodka in my bar. I'm going to bring this in because it's St. George. Like, and there was that sort of trust. And for us, it's part of the legacy of St. George. It's part of 40 years of being at the vanguard of this, of making sure when we put something like this out into the world, it's got to be really unique and expressive and thoughtful, and it's got to be meaningful. One of the areas that flavored vodka, you know, obviously has a bad rap from some of the lesser flavored vodkas, I'll say. But one of the things that we really were conscious of, flavored vodka for distillers, it's a playground. It's almost like a non-category in a way where you just have a beautiful white canvas to paint a picture on. So what do you want to say with this? You're not held to juniper in the gin world. You're not held to any particular grain profiles for different types of whiskey or anything. This is just a pure kind of wide open area for us to explore and try to create something that's really unique. And in this case, it's Lance's sense memory from, you know, basically having that sort of like fresh tomato water and trying to sort of translate that idea through distillation to something totally unique and different.
Absolutely. And it is very unique and different and very good. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take another break here on the show. We're going to come back. We're going to continue chatting with Dave and Lance from St. George Spirits. Friends, come on back.
Till the end of time, I feel so fine, I feel so light and gay.
Hi, Brian Diaz, host of the NOLA Drink Show here. Check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of food, drink, and culture shows. Visit southernfood.org for more. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here. Yeah, you know that. And also happy to be chatting with my guests, Dave Smith and Lance Winters from St. George Spirits in California. Gents, thanks for joining me again. Great seeing you, talking to you. Dave, I told you this before a couple months ago when we were hanging out. Not blowing smoke here. I really love what you guys do. Everything that you make is so unique and so well done. There's a great story behind it, a great presentation behind it. And you guys actually have a great diversity in your portfolio. I mean, you're not a one trick pony, two trick pony, three trick pony. You guys have a pretty, how many things are actually today? What's available and how big is the portfolio?
I was promised there'd be no math here. there's more. We make more things than I can comfortably count. I'm pretty sure I've heard some numbers recently. If you include a lot of the smaller batches, some one-off things in there, we're probably pushing out closer to 40 plus SKUs at this point.
Oh, wow, but I have no idea. Okay.
Right. Can we actually say that we are the Swiss Army knife of trick ponies?
There you go. I like that. That's perfect. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Like it's like the officer model, right? Where you have like, there's like 40 things in there. That makes a lot of sense.
You need to put it in a backpack because it won't fit comfortably in your pocket, but it gets everything done that you need
to get done. Cool. Awesome. I had no idea that there were that many SKUs. Okay. Well, Dave, then you definitely owe me a return trip or Lance when you come down here, because I know, I mean, you were not generous with me at all, man. We only tasted what, like 12 things when we got together.
Dave was packing light that time.
that was a small table that was overflowing. It had an abundance of lovely alcohols on it.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a fine afternoon. I came home in a good mood. We'll put it that way. Well, hey, you guys. So the third thing that we're going to taste here, and the last thing we're going to taste on the program, is the Baller Whiskey. And I think this has got to be right in your wheelhouse, right, Lance, because of what we were talking about with your background and how you got involved with the distillery in the first place.
Yeah, you bet. But it's something that Dave and I developed side by side after going and having way too many delicious bowls of ramen at our friend's ramen shop in Oakland. We would go in there, and the thing that you need to have to really balance out as a counterpoint a rich, delicious porky bowl of ramen is a highball. And a well-crafted highball is going to offer some great bites and acidity, and that's a great counterpoint to that ramen bowl. And we would enjoy some delicious highballs made with typically with Hibiki whiskey, which isn't a hardship by any stretch, right? We shouldn't be complaining about it. And yet we are chronic complainers. And so we did. and basically what we were upset about was the fact that these people were close friends, very close friends, still are. And we love and respect what they do. And we want to be a part of their club. We want to be able to play in their treehouse. And so our regular single malt whiskey is way too rich and chocolatey to really balance out the ramen. And so we went through the stacks of barrels that we have outside. I'm pointing here, your listeners can't see this, but I'm pointing out the window to where all of our barrels are. It's a window to the inside of the distillery. We don't keep our barrels outside, everybody. We went through and found some experimental barrels that we had done that were a much leaner mash bill. These were two row pale and Munich malt. So simple, clean, and a very, very neutral cask that they had gone into, a used bourbon cask. We had done some experiments utilizing maple charcoal and found that instead of removing flavor, it actually added a bunch of smoke flavor. So we threw some of that in to punch up some smoke so that we'd have some good smoke that it delivered. And it was pretty delicious. And we were ready to bottle it, had a label developed, had bottles put together. And the day that we were going to do that, or the week that we were going to do that, I poured some umeshu, for those of you in the listening audience who don't know umeshu, it's a liqueur made from a Japanese stone fruit called ume, soaked in rice spirit. And we made some of that in house just for fun. And I poured some into a glass, rinsed the glass out, dumped it, and then poured some of the baller whiskey that had yet to be bottled into that glass, smelled it and tasted it. I'm like, oh my God, that's so good. I put it in front of Dave, who was all kinds of upset at me because as soon as we both smelled and tasted that version of it, we both knew that we're going to have to delay our bottling by anywhere from 12 to 18 months because we have to make umeshu. We have to make enough of it to put into barrels. And we have to make enough barrels that we can barrel finish this whiskey in those umeshu barrels and make it exactly what it needs to be. But we did, because once you know the right way to do something, you're a schmuck if you don't do it that way. And my mama didn't raise no schmucks. So what we did was we set about to getting some ume fruit. Dave, how difficult was it making umeshu?
That first go around, it was about 500 pounds of ume fruit, and we went to a very zen-like place to pick out each stem from each ume fruit individually.
Wow.
Using basically just like skewers, sitting around in buckets. And it was about 4.5 days work for four people to sit around and pick out all the stems out of each ume fruit before we started the infusion process with the house-made shochu and organic cane sugar, and then make the umeshu itself so we can then start to barrel age the umeshu. So we can then pull the umeshu out of those casks and then start finishing baller in those umeshu casks. And it was a work of love. And to Lance's point, though, once the idea was right, once you know the right way to do something, I think we're incredibly fortunate. So again, it's one of the unique things about St. George Spirits. We had the opportunity to choose a bad path for the business by delaying the entire project for, you know, close to a year and a half, and to be able to say, this is the right way to do this. So we're actually not going to put this thing out into the world when we had planned on it. We're going to delay it, and we're not going to, you know, we'll figure out the consequences to the business on the other side of this. We're making something because we care about it, because we love it. We want this to be absolutely perfect. It's our best effort every time. I don't know that everyone has the opportunity to think that way. They don't have, that's a pretty special thing that we get to enjoy here.
And it very much, it's telling in the bottle, you guys, in what comes out. you guys are sticking around for another shot of NOLA Drinks, our podcast only segment, but in a minute or so that we have left before I have to close out the portion of the radio show, guys, who should I throw it to? Dave, will you tell people where they can find you online and so on?
Absolutely. So our website's www.stgeorgespirits.com. That's stgeorgespirits.com. The website's brand new, recently updated, and it's absolutely beautiful. A lot of talented folks have worked very hard to try to share a story and show what we make and why we make it. And so that's all out there. And additionally,
all the things that we're not: fast, efficient, and beautiful.
All of those things. And then obviously, social media is worth exploring as well. And again, it's ST George Spirits on all of our social media handles.
Awesome. You guys, thanks. You're sticking around for another shot with NOLA Drinks, so hang tight for 1 second. Friends, go to the website, noladrinks.com. You can get the podcast there from our website or your favorite podcast platform. It's there waiting for you as we speak. But if you are a radio listener, I do appreciate it. Remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all. Alright, everybody, up another shot with NOLA Drinks. Hey friends, thanks for sticking around. We're gonna bounce right back over to our featured interview, chatting with Lance and Dave from St. George Spirits. Talk a little bit more about what they do and get some of their thoughts and insight on the spirits industry here in the United States. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with NOLA Drinks. Thanks for sticking around, friends. We are chatting with Lance and Dave, as you know, from St. George Spirits, all the way out there in California in the Bay Area. And we noted this before, Lance, at the top of the show, that you come from my hometown of Fremont. We've been sharing a lot of stories. Dave had to sit through a whole shit ton of stories that we actually just shared about our old haunts in Fremont, the record store I used to work at, the liquor stores they used to sell to us when we were underage, and all that other really important stuff. So, Dave, I thank you for your patience in listening to the tales of Fremont. We'll call it that. The lore of Fremont.
The tall tales, the legends of Fremont. I believe at this point, and I mean this in the most positive, respectful way possible, both legends of Fremont today.
Thank you. I
thanks. Thanks. Very kind.
There you go. And it's a really long list. And to quote a movie, if you know what the reference is, then you do. If not, I'm not going to say. You can find that list on a leaflet. Anyway, so thanks you guys again for making time, and thanks for sharing some delicious juice with me. I know we're going to talk a little bit about cocktails and some stuff, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the market here in the States for craft spirits. But is there any finer notes that we want to put on any of these spirits? Or I think we kind of got, as we tasted through things and talked with you guys about the story, obviously we skipped lots of parts of the story, but as far as the philosophy goes of what you guys do, is there anything that we need to add that we want to touch on? It is also unique what you do in this very approach-based, goal-based method. I keep saying that, but.
Well, and I appreciate you asking it again, because of the fact that I feel like there's so often spirits producers get so hung up on talking about the what and the how, the ingredients and the process. Those those are secondary. What should be primary for all of us is why. Why are you making this? Are you making this because you really needed a business opportunity and it seemed like the craft spirit segment was making double-digit profits, double-digit growth over the last 30 years, and so you wanted to jump into that because it was safe money? Did you do it because there was a great opportunity to buy a whole bunch of barrels, put your name on them, and put them out in the world? Or did you do it because you've got a passion for creating something that isn't out there yet and you want to change the dialogue? So the why becomes the most important part of it. And I think for us, the why with the terroir, being able to paint a picture and take gin to a place that it's never been before. To bounce right out of philosophical, but to talk about a cocktail, because now that I'm thinking about the terroir, I'm thinking about one of my other favorites. I did when we were offline was talking about the terroir martini, which is really easy and no fault, especially since my terroir martini is not even a true martini because there is no vermouth. It's just really cold gin in a glass. But the other one that's
is that like a Nick and Nora or a pint glass or what is it?
It's a punch bowl with a stem, Dave. Good thick stem, but it's a punch bowl no less.
Oh, straw. I can get a lot more gin with this.
Yeah. just ladle it like it's hot fudge. So the bramble, which, it was invented in London in the mid 80s. When I had my first bramble with the terroir gin, I thought for sure that Dick Bradsell had time traveled into the future, tasted terroir, and created that cocktail waiting for the terroir to be made. And let's talk about the why. You're talking about your other guest and how she talked about why her cocktails worked. Why the bramble works with the terroir is that with the blackberry liqueur, the creme de beurre that goes in, the seed character that's present in a really well-made creme de beurre has this great grassiness that fills in another aspect of the landscape. You get that together with citrus and shaved ice, you've got yourself a really beautiful grown-up snow cone, and it works because it's a treat, and those things just lock up together in that beautiful landscape portrait.
And just so you know, Lance, we have those here, and we call them snowballs, and we call them grown-up snowballs.
Love it.
So there you go. Just I'm translating here. Interpreting.
A rose by any other name.
Lovely. Okay. Very cool. And I was thinking, I'm a big fan of the Gibson cocktail, and I think this would go great. The terroir gin would just be fantastic.
Speaking Dave's language.
Yeah, usually when Lance saddles up and orders a punch bowl of terroir martini, I go for the Gibson route on it. I love that cocktail onion. I love that just like that touch of acidity that comes with it, and it just layers in with the terroir gin and some of the really cooling sort of menthol notes and the piney notes there. It's really beautiful.
Absolutely, and I want to clarify something for listeners too, because we were talking about this off air, Lance. I was referring to a friend of ours who made drinks, and we were talking about sort of what works and what doesn't. That was a show. I'll tell listeners we were talking to Abigail Gulo. People around her know who she is, and you can go back about 2-3 episodes, Making Good Drinks with Abigail, and find out what we talked about there. You know, and on the Gibson, you guys, this is a tangent, but a friend of mine's a bartender here in town, and she macerated the cocktail onions in Moroccan spices. And so she makes basically, it's like a dirty Gibson because she uses the juice, puts the Moroccan spices just right into the cocktail onion jar, lets that soak for a few days, and then drops that in and adds this really nice element to that drink. And I can see that actually doing really well with the terroir gin, even like that piney note, I think would go real well with it.
Right on.
Absolutely. I love that. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. So what about, I mean, I think there's some obvious candidates here. Like if we're talking about the chili vodka, I mean, you can't screw up a Bloody Mary with this vodka, I wouldn't think. It's kind of obvious on that front. Vodka martini, because I kind of like spicy martinis like that. But what's a creative idea or two that you guys recommend for that one?
The green chili vodka, there's a cocktail that my wife absolutely loves. It's a patio crusher. And green chili vodka use our Brutto Americano some lemon juice, some orange bitters, and a little bit of simple syrup.
Ooh.
And it's the kind of thing that is basically just shaken up. And you, I advise you don't make it don't make a patio crusher. You need to make a pitcher of patio crushers because you're going to go fast.
It's a big patio.
It's a big patio. There you go.
They just do a lot of crushing.
But it's a beautiful cocktail. Really, really, the green chili and the Brutto are, it's the kind of thing that I wouldn't necessarily assume that they would work well together. And you get some of the vibrancy, some of the sort of lush, the sweet vegetable characters from the green chili vodka. And then the Brutto Americano, some of the citrus sort of aligns really well with the green chili vodka. And also just, basically the weight and the heft to it, the fact that it's an aperitivo. It's a bitter liqueur, and it has a lot of sort of weight and character that comes along with it to help just change the shape of the green chili vodka and make it a little less less savory. Okay. And more to feel like a really grown up cocktail.
That sounds nice, because it has gonna have that little sweet note, right, in the Americano with the Brutto Americano kind of offset. Yeah.
Yeah, there's specific orange in there. There's and there's some of the other botanical ingredients all really lend to that.
Okay.
So. A lovely cocktail.
Great. And I know, and just so for listeners too, you guys have a bunch of drink recipes on your website. So that's a good place to go if you're looking to figure out what to do with some of this stuff. But how about the last one here with the St. George Baller whiskey? I know, I mean, we actually had a highball, Dave, when you were in town with it. Lovely in a highball. I think it's really interesting. We didn't really talk too much about the flavor profile of it. There's, and I know when I tasted it the first time a couple months ago, it has that single malt kind of scotch characteristic. It's not, I don't find it like super peaty or anything, but I get, you know, you get that kind of what you get from scotch, a little bit of that kind of peat note, a little bit of a smoky note on it. But then there's such a fine sweetness, touch of sweetness on it, that it kind of almost reminds me of this nice marriage between, you know, bourbon and a single malt scotch. And so I think it can kind of be, I'm just speculating here, but I can think of, you could kind of cut it two different ways with this. I think it can kind of play nicely with a lot of different things, but what would be some recommendations that you guys have there?
The Boulevardier.
Oh, there you go. Sure.
Yeah. It's a really, really lovely way to go. Don't say it, Dave.
Boulevardier.
No.
Oh, no.
Dave, you got this.
I'm sorry. Ryan, you're welcome.
You don't call it that. It's the Sunset
Dave, is it okay if I don't quote you on that? I'm just kidding. I'm sorry, Lance. Go on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to ask for control of the peeper button. Again, whatever you want to call it, make a Boulevardier with the Baller, and it's a delicious way to go. Baller Old Fashioned's not bad either. I think just being able to experiment with that one, and I get sort of hung up on just filling a glass with it and sitting and sipping it.
You know what? Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
I was just gonna say it actually, so much of it's influenced and we're inspired by a highball. But a Baller on its own with an ice cube is fantastic. It's a really lovely sipping whiskey on its own.
Absolutely. I'm enjoying it greatly right now. And what I would say, and this is somewhat to my taste, because I always, with old fashions, I don't like them overly sweet. So I know I'm a pain in the ass for certain bartenders, because one of my questions is, do you do 1-to-1 simple or do you 2-to-1 simple? And then from there, I still say light simple, but it's going to be lighter if it's 2-to-1 than 1-to-1. But this one, I would definitely say that I would not want them to overdo the simple on it in an old fashioned, because I think it's going to run it over too much in my view. So I think you want to make sure you have a little bit of a judicious approach to the simple syrup if you're using this in an old fashioned.
Yeah, there's a delicate note that you wouldn't expect to find in a whiskey that's bottled at 47% that can easily get run over with too much sugar.
Yep, absolutely. What were you going to say, Dave?
I was just going to say, I suspect that you and I, we run in similar circles for what we want in an old fashioned. I suspect that I can make you one that would satisfy you. I expect that the same would be true. Cause ask any bartender, how do you make your old fashioned? And you'll get no fewer than two or three replies to that, like
right.
All of it, what they need to do and kind of be aware of what people are looking for. Some folks are, they basically, there's no way, what do you mean? There's no fruit muddled in this. Why would, that's not an old fashioned.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, hey, I know you guys, I got to get you out of here pretty quick, but I did want to ask you this question, kind of not talking about cocktails so much. I mentioned to you before we went on the air, Steve Ray, who is a consultant here on the U.S. market, was on the previous show. Listeners, if you haven't heard that one, go check it out. Steve works with foreign producers to bring stuff into the U.S. And we talked a lot about the pastiche, I'll use that word, of landscape that you deal with, especially as a foreign producer, dealing with, I believe it's actually technically 52 different entities, 50 states, and then two other things, a county in Maryland, right, and something else, that have different rules and laws. And then we were talking also about the online market or the online sales mechanisms, the availability of information, how that's changed things. But being that you guys have been in the business for 40 years collectively as a distillery and as a craft distillery, how do you see the craft spirits landscape? I know it's a broad stroke question, but how do you see the craft spirits landscape now? And kind of, I'll just even ask you, say, like out into the future, how do you see it going? Do you just, and I'll just leave it at that. How do, to both of you.
Dave, what's your feeling about all that?
I think it's kind of a golden age. I think that things that there's more direct access as state laws have changed, certainly in America, there's more direct access for small producers to put small scale products out into the world, to get in front of consumers, to sort of get their feet under them. And the really good ideas, they should carry some weight. They should be able to help develop that distillery into something that can go further afield. I would hope, at least, that it goes beyond just locality. Like, if something's made locally, it's not a good enough reason for it to exist. If it's made poorly and locally, that's not a great reason to be a distillery. If you can make something that's really excellent and truly unique and exciting, and you're also local, man, I love this. I'm excited by it. I think that it's a really an amazing opportunity, because there's so much more opportunity today to have that direct access, to do some online sales, to do direct to consumer sales, or small distilleries, depending upon their state and county and all those, you know, regulations around it. Think about 40 years ago when York founded this business. That's not an option. That's remotely an option. And that hasn't really been an option until probably the last 15 years or so, as states have slowly come on board and started to make it easier for these small businesses to share what they're making and putting out to the world. And then if it's really worthwhile, then it can start to engage with the distribution system, and then it can really go further afield and do a lot more. So I kind of feel like we're in a golden age right now. It's an exciting time.
So, and do you think it's overall, on balance, it's getting better, it's getting easier, access to markets, at least domestically, is improving for you guys?
Yeah, it's definitely getting there. And I feel that there's still a lot of change to be undertaken. I mean, take our own state of California, for example. I've had the opportunity to watch California change. We are known throughout the rest of the country as being one of the most progressive states in the union. And yet Utah saw much more great liberalization of their liquor laws than California has even still seen. And when I started distilling 26 years ago, you couldn't get a beer that was over 3.2% alcohol in Utah. And if you wanted to have a cocktail, you had to become a member of a private club where all the drinks were served from 50 ml bottles, so that they could track the amount of liquor that was going out. Fast forward to, I don't know, this is probably 10 years ago when, longer, Dave,
yep.
when you could actually have a distillery that you could ski up to, have dinner in the restaurant, have cocktails made from the stuff that they've made on site, and then ski away with a few bottles. California is still not really there. And so just seeing some of these laws start to change is going to be really helpful, especially for the people who have really unique ideas. It's very, very difficult to find meaningful distribution for most new distillers. And we're very fortunate. 40 years, we're tried and true. We have, there's a lot of confidence that our distributors have in us to be able to create products that are going to be compelling and that are going to go out to the market. But when you're brand new, you don't have that same advantage there's an audacity that we have that's based on 40 years, that's based on the experience that we have with our distributors. And not everybody can afford to be that audacious, which is unfortunate, because the distillers that we want to see starting more distilleries, They're not the ones that are making safe products. There's enough safe stuff out there. We want to see more people making things that are pushing the edge of the envelope. And I'd really love to see, you know, especially since this is the part of your show where it's mostly going to be industry people listening. If you find a spirit that's out there that's really edgy and unique and interesting, and it's a tough story to tell, but you know it's a compelling thing to drink, get behind it. Pour it at your bar. Feature it in a cocktail. Do that small distiller a solid favor and show them off. You'll be rewarded by your customer because your customer is going to say, "My God, I've never tried anything like that before," and you become a trusted source of wonderful curated information at that point. So, so do yourself and all of your customers a favor and discover some wonderful things, whether it's from right near where you are or from the other side of the world, something that's unique. One of the products that I'll call out right now, there's a gin that's made down in Mexico from a distillery in Oaxaca called Gracias a Dios. And they make a gin that, if I'm not mistaken, it's got 33 separate botanicals that all come from Mexico. And it's got mezcal as a base. And it's wonderful. It's weird. It's unexpected. But try it. Make some things with it. You'll be glad you did. There are a handful of amazing producers that are out there that you can really get behind and feel good about it.
That's a really good point, Lance. Thank you for sharing that. And I know, Dave, you and I talked about this before when we were visiting a couple months ago, and I've said this on the show probably 36 times, if not three times that amount. Bartenders are our ambassadors, and bartenders and beverage directors and bottle shop owners. These people are our gatekeepers, and I can't tell you how many things I've discovered through them. And so I think you hit the nail right on the head, Lance, that these are, get behind something and, you know, be our tour guide. We need you to do that. And it's really important. I think it's a great, well-taken point, Lance. Thank you very much. Did you want to add anything to that, Dave? Or because otherwise I was going to ask you to go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, I think it's right on that. I was just going to share. I think both Lance and I, we've had that experience where bartenders said, like, you got to try this, and yep, you get inspired, you get excited. It makes you think differently about what you're drinking, what you like drinking, and it opens a door for you. And that's just like, that's one of my favorite experiences at a bar, is that sense of discovery that we don't get that privilege all the time. And it's really, really great when you have that. And there's a connection of bartender. They become a trusted palate. They become your guide. That's a really cool thing.
Absolutely. Well said, Dave. Thank you. Dave, tell people one more time before we let you go where they can find St. George Spirits online and such.
Yeah, absolutely. Please check out our website. It's www.stgeorgespirits.com. That's stgeorgespirits.com. And then for our social media handles, it's stgeorgespirits. For all of them across the board, Twitter, Instagram, all of it. So awesome. Check it out.
Awesome. Thanks so much, you guys. I really appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you down here in New Orleans, and I look forward to paying you a visit out there to the homeland. I'm going to come crash the party if that's cool.
Right on. That sounds great. Thanks, Brian.
Awesome.
Bring it with Brian. Really, really appreciate you. And thanks for taking good care of us. And thanks for doing what you do, man, and sharing all this.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Thanks so much. Friends, a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining me on the NOLA Drink Show this week, friends. Happy to have had you here. Yeah, you know that. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lance and Dave. A lot of fun. As I mentioned at the top of the show, and we touched on this during the interview as well, lots of sidebar conversations, and that's probably where they needed to stay. Sidebar conversations about Fremont, California, where Lance and I both hail from. Had a lot of really good laughs talking about stupid crap that we used to do when we lived in Fremont. Talking about, you know, like where we could buy liquor when we were underage, you know, important things like that. So again, we spared you most of that, which I'm sure you're thankful for. But thanks to Lance and Dave, really a lot of fun. I look forward to visiting the distillery the next time I make it back out to California to check things out there. I also mentioned at the top of the show, we have a whole host of new shows, a raft, if you will, of new shows. We're getting on the schedule in the coming weeks. I mentioned the new exhibit at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, all about the Filipino contributions to the culinary landscape here in New Orleans, and really going to be a very interesting conversation. Look, I keep saying interesting, it will be, and I'm really looking forward to bringing you that one. Next week, we've got the show on Old Fashioned Week, which is a charitable event put on by Elijah Craig, benefiting the Southern Smoke Foundation, so look forward to bringing you a conversation about that. Our friends from Turning Tables went to Mexico recently. I think I've mentioned this one before, so we're going to get a report from them and talk about their trip down to the tequila producing area in Mexico. And then from there, we're also going to kind of stay in Mexico, if you will, in spirit, pun intended. We're going to be chatting with the guys from De Nada Tequila, a couple young guys that met at Tulane University here in New Orleans. And they started a tequila brand working with a generational family down there in Mexico. Generational family meaning having been distilled tequila for generations down there. The brand is big on environmental sustainability, cultural sustainability, so that'll inform a lot of our conversation. Looking forward to bringing you that. We're also going to be talking with our friends again from the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. They've got a new exhibit opening up in October on juke joints. And they got an event kicking off, and we're going to talk about the new exhibit, talk about the event coming up. They're basically going to be doing like a juke joint. They have this, you know, an exhibit that looks like a juke joint going into the museum, and there's going to be live music. The Rayfords, who are a famous barbecue family from the Carolinas, are going to be coming out, cooking up some food. So some combination of those folks, actually Rayford Sr., and I'm forgetting his name, terrible off the top of my head, but he's a musician, so that's going to be who's providing the performance going on. That event's going to be really fun on October 15th at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, as I mentioned, but we'll be bringing you a show on that. We're also going to be joined by our friend on a different show, Jeffrey Wilson. Jeffrey is part of Turning Tables, but we're going to be doing a show on young BIPOC bartenders here in the New Orleans area, and that's going to be really an interesting and probably challenging conversation and important conversation as well. So those are some things to be on the lookout for in the coming weeks, friends. That's pretty much what I got for you. We'll be back with our show on Old Fashioned Week, benefiting the Southern Smoke Foundation next week. Here's to you.